Well, good afternoon, brethren, and good morning to those of you across the Atlantic. Today we're going to continue our Bible reading or Bible study of the book of Exodus. Last time we read Exodus chapters 1 through 6, made a very good start, and in those chapters we'll recollect that we saw the birth of Moses in somewhat miraculous circumstances, how he grew up in the royal palace in Egypt, was a man who was mighty in word and deeds, and who at the age of 40 got involved in a scrap, killed an Egyptian, and then took off into the wilderness, where he spent another 40 years of his life looking after sheep, day in and day out. And then at that age of about 80, there was the incident of the strange burning bush, when God spoke to Moses and gave instructions to go back to Egypt and to bring out the people of Israel out of their captivity to the promised land. And then we saw how Moses made his way back, started to explain to the Israelites about how God would use them, and then that brings us up more or less to chapter 7, where we begin today. Chapter 7, and starting in verse 1. So the Eternal said to Moses, "See, I have made you as God to Pharaoh, and Aaron your brother shall be your prophet. You shall speak all that I command you, and Aaron your brother shall speak to Pharaoh that he must send the children of Israel out of his land." You'll recollect that Moses kept rejecting God's instructions, saying, amongst other things, that, "Well, I just can't speak properly, God. You know, I stutter. I haven't got the right words." And eventually, God was getting rather exasperated, but sent Aaron, who would act as a spokesperson, to Moses. And that's how it happened. Verse 3, "And I will harden Pharaoh's heart and multiply my signs and my wonders in the land of Egypt. But Pharaoh will not heed you, so that I may lay my hand on Egypt and bring my armies and my people, the children of Israel, out of the land of Egypt by great judgments. And Egyptians shall know that I am the Eternal Jehovah when I stretch out my hand on Egypt and bring out the children of Israel from among them." And we have to remember that Egypt in these days was the most powerful empire on the earth. You've seen probably pictures, photographs, artists' drawings of the great pyramids, of the great temples. Egypt had great armies. It was a very educated society. This was a very, very powerful nation. And here among it are several million Israelite slaves. Now, how are you going to bring out a slave people who have no power, no politicians representing them, from the mightiest empire on the earth in those days? How do you do it? Verse 6, "Then Moses and Aaron did so, just as the Eternal commanded them, so they did. And Moses was 80 years old, and Aaron 83 years old, when they spoke to Pharaoh." Now, these were not young men, were they? 80 years being prepared just for this particular episode in your life. And of course, ultimately, age, frankly, isn't that important. It was evident as God tried to convince Moses earlier to go and do this this work, that Moses kept finding reasons why. "I'm not suitable, God. I'm not educated the right way. I don't speak too well. Tell you what, God, go and find somebody else, will you?" And God got rather angry at that point. "Moses, I, the Creator, the Eternal God, will be with you. I'm on your side. We can do it. I'll back you up and support you. Whether you're 80 years old, doesn't make much difference to God. You know, God is all-powerful, and it's not by might or power, but by God's Spirit that all of us overcome. None of us should say, 'Well, I didn't go to university. I'm not educated. I'm not very tall. I'm not very wealthy. I'm a poor person. I don't speak too well.' We can all, like Moses, find a million reasons or excuses for not getting involved in doing what God wants us to do. But as far as God's concerned, if he is with us, we can do it. Paul said, I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. And again, if God be for us, who can be against us? So every single one of us, whether we're young, middle-aged or old-aged, whether we're poor or wealthy, whether we're big and strong or small and frail, with God on our side, we can do it. Whatever God calls us to do, we can achieve. Anything else is frankly not showing faith in God. Verse 8, then the Eternal spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, when Pharaoh speaks to you, saying, show a miracle for yourselves, then you shall say to Aaron, take your rod and cast it before Pharaoh, and let it become a serpent. We'll remember that Moses has already done that over there in Midian. So Moses and Aaron went into Pharaoh, and they did so, just as the Eternal commanded. And Aaron cast down his rod before Pharaoh and before his servants, and it became a serpent. So, a miracle. This big shepherd's rod, this big stick, you toss it down on the floor in front of Pharaoh and his merry men, and suddenly it starts wriggling and hissing. It becomes a snake. Fantastic, unbelievable. But, verse 11, Pharaoh also called the wise men and the sorcerers, two classes of individuals, and so the magicians of Egypt, they also did in like manner with their enchantments. For every man threw down his rod, and they became serpents. Well, this is astonishing. You know, here come these wise guys, these wise men, these enchanters, and they throw down their sticks on the floor, and lo and behold, they turn into serpents. How did that come about? Was it like some illusion they managed to do? Or did they really have miraculous powers which came from Satan? You could argue it one way or the other. I've heard that there's a type of serpent which, if you squeeze the back of his head, that they become rigid, just like a rod. And when you throw them down, obviously the pressure in the back of their head is released and they start wriggling again. I don't know if that's true or not. That's what some people say. But either way up, look what happened next. But Aaron's rod swallowed up their rods. So they could do something, these enchanters, these sorcerers, whether by miraculous means or just by sort of magic and illusion. Either way up, Aaron's rod demonstrated it was more powerful because it gobbled all the rest up. I don't know if it was 3 or 4 or 10 of them or whatever, but they all disappeared. Verse 13, and Pharaoh's heart grew hard, and he did not heed them, as the Lord had said. So Moses did this particular miracle. Pharaoh saw it and said, not impressed. Yeah, not impressed. My guys could almost do that. Sorry, get out of here. And so the guy was a very thick-skinned individual, this Pharaoh. He was not a man who was easy to humble. And when he left him to his own devices, he quickly grew hard in heart. Interesting in this little passage that we do actually find out the names of two of these magicians, because Paul referred to them later on. If you keep your finger here, because we're coming back shortly, and let's look at 2 Timothy chapter 3. Just turn briefly to 2 Timothy chapter 3. And starting in verse 8. To Timothy, and chapter 3, verse 8, we read, now as Jannes and Jambres resisted Moses, so do these also resist the truth. Men of corrupt minds disapprove concerning the faith, but they will progress no further, for their folly will be manifest to all as theirs. Jannes and Jambres also was. So here's the names of two of the guys that were there in Pharaoh's court, Jannes and Jambres, who it says resisted Moses. You know, they tried to support the Pharaoh. They said, oh, come on, Pharaoh. Moses isn't doing anything special here. Look, we can do the same things as Moses can do. There's nothing to it. The guy's just trying to con you. You know, pay no attention to him. So these two false prophets, Jannes and Jambres, resisted and opposed Moses and convince the Pharaoh to do that. And what Paul's saying is, you know, Timothy, you'll find people like that in God's church, even people like Jannes and Jambres, who will actually resist God's truth. They will oppose it. And frankly, Timothy, they will oppose you. And I think if we read Mr. Armstrong's autobiography, we can see how he was opposed time and time and time again as he sought to bring, you know, God's truth out to people. And of course, following his death, it's amazing how many Jannes and Jambreses crept out the woodwork and have spent the last 15 or 20 years doing all they can to oppose the truth. Anyway, back to Exodus chapter 7. And we're moving now towards the first of the 10 plagues that would strike at Egypt. Verse 14. So the Eternal said to Moses, Pharaoh's heart is hard. He refuses to let the people go. And this was quite predictable. Go to Pharaoh in the morning when he goes out to the water, that would be the Nile, and you shall stand by the river's bank to meet him. And the rod which was turned to a serpent you shall take in your hand. So get up early tomorrow morning, get down to the Nile. We know that Pharaoh goes down there every day to bathe in the Nile, which was, of course, also a sort of holy river, just like the Ganges is today to those in India. Verse 16, and you shall say to him, the Eternal God of the Hebrews has sent me to you, saying, let my people go, that they may serve me in the wilderness. But indeed, until now you would not hear. Thus says the Eternal, by this you shall know that I am the Eternal. Behold, I will strike the waters which are in the river with the rod that is in my hand, and they shall be turned to blood. And the fish that are in the river shall die. Obviously, fish can't swim around and breathe and live in blood or a bloody substance. And the river shall stink, and the Egyptians will loathe to drink the water of the river. Which, you know, would be quite an upset to any of us to experience that in our local rivers and so on. But to the Egyptians, the Nile was, well, it was one of their gods, virtually. The Nile was what brought life every year as it overflowed its boundaries and irrigated the land. Historians say the waters of the Nile were so delicious that it was just like it was drinking like a god's drink. It was so beautiful. So to have your god, the Nile, which brought you life and fruit and trees and crops, actually turning to blood, and all the fish in it dying, and all things stinking in this terrible pall of smell all over the land from the dying fish and the bloody river, that would be an absolute affront to the Egyptian people. Verse 19. Then the Eternal spoke to Moses, say to Aaron, who is of course the spokesperson for Moses, take your rod and stretch out your hand over the waters of Egypt, over their streams, over their rivers, over their ponds, and over all their pools of water, that they may become blood. And there shall be blood throughout all the land of Egypt, both in vessels of wood and vessels of stone. So even the water that's not in their rivers and streams, but actually in jugs and bottles and so on, all of it was to turn to blood. Which, you know, frankly, is quite unappealing, I think we'd have to say. Verse 20, and Moses and Aaron did so, just as the Eternal commanded. So he lifted up the rod and struck the waters that were in the river in the sight of Pharaoh and in the sight of his servants, and all the waters that were in the river were turned to blood. So here's the Pharaoh down there early in the morning, about to enjoy his early morning dip. He's got his counselors and supporters and top politicians by his side. Along comes Moses and Aaron, make the statement. Then suddenly, as you look at the river, it starts to change its color. Instead of being sort of, you know, blue, it starts to sort of turn darker. And you're looking at it and thinking, what is happening here? And then it starts to turn darker and darker. And then a sort of red tinge appears, which deepens and becomes deep red in color. And then, oh my word, here comes some fish belly up there to the surface. And everywhere you look around Egypt, all the waters and streams and rivers are turning to blood. Fish dying, and of course, you can't drink blood. So here's all the Egyptians who are used to drinking beautiful, fresh, wonderful water from the Nile, you know, their god, and suddenly it's poison. You know, horrible. verse 21. The fish that were in the river died, the river stank, and the Egyptians could not drink the water of the river. So there was blood throughout all the land of Egypt. Then the magicians of Egypt did so with their enchantments. Must have found some water somewhere, perhaps in some little bits and pieces, some jars or whatever, and they did something similar to make it turn red. And Pharaoh's heart grew hard, and he did not heed them, as the Eternal had said. And Pharaoh turned and went into his house, neither was his heart moved by this. This guy turns out to be a very, very tough character. He's not going to be easily moved to one side. He's seen this miracle. His enchanters do something similar, perhaps an illusion there. And the guy says, no, sorry, I don't believe in this Jehovah character. Don't want to know about him. Moses and Aaron, get lost. He turns around and goes into his house. Not interested. Verse 24. So all the Egyptians dug all around the river for water to drink, because they could not drink the water of the river. And 7 days passed after the Eternal had struck the river. And this was the first, this was number one of the 10 plagues. How long did they take? Well, it's interesting to think about it. You know, here's a world-ruling empire, great armies, great education, art, poetry, a powerful nation that's been ruling for quite a long time. And here's a slave people that you're going to somehow deliver out of this powerful empire. How long will it take you? Years? Well, not very long as it turns out. This is plague number one. There were 10 altogether. Now, Archbishop Usher, whom you might know as he was a Catholic bishop in Ireland, living way back in the, 1600s. He's the guy that worked out a chronology of the Bible, and some people's Bibles show that Genesis chapter 1 occurred about 4004 BC. There's quite a few Bibles have got those dates in their margins. Well, Archbishop Usher was the guy that worked all this out and came up with the idea that Genesis chapter 1 was 4004 BC. And he probably wasn't too far out. He also looked at these 10 plagues, and he reckoned that they took place in less than 1 month. So plague number 1, all the way through to plague number 10, was barely 1 month. In fact, he's actually got the dates worked out, if you want them. I'm not sure how accurate the dates are, but he has got the dates, you know, each week, what day of the month it took place. What you can probably say is that even if he's wrong, probably the whole 10 plagues didn't last much more than 6 or 7 weeks, at the end of which Israel walked out of Egypt, the most powerful empire on the earth. So really, it didn't take long to bring a complete empire to his knees. And you think today about, well, here's the powerful United States of America. It's the only superpower left on the face of this earth. There's other countries like Britain, France, and Germany, quite powerful in their ways. How long to bring these great empires down? A few weeks is all it would take. If people think that prophecy will take years and years to work its way out, it would take months and years to bring America down from its power today to being weak and easy to overcome, the answer is no. The great empire of Egypt was brought to its knees, virtually destroyed, in possibly as little as just 1 month. And we'll see exactly how that took place as we go through these plagues. And these plagues that we read about, in many ways, are precursors of what will happen in the future. If again, keep your fingers there, but turn to Revelation chapter 16, we'll find that several of these plagues are going to happen again with equally devastating consequences when they happen in the near future. Revelation 16 is a passage that talks about the plagues of God, the wrath of God, the seven last plagues. And if we pick up the story here with chapter 16 of Revelation, starting in verse 3, we read here, the second angel poured out his bowl or his vial on the sea, and it became blood, as of a dead man. So, not even fresh blood, but dead blood, stinking. And every living creature in the sea died. You know, here we are right towards the end of the end time. We've had the seven trumpets. We're now into the seven last plagues that make up the wrath of God. And look at them. You know, the second one turns out to be the sea, not just the Nile River and a few streams and so on, but the entire oceans turned into, you know, decaying blood. Verse 4, then the third angel poured out his bowl on the rivers and springs of water, and they became blood. And I heard the angel of the waters saying, you are righteous, O Lord, the one who is and who was and who is to be, because you have judged these things. For they have shed the blood of saints and prophets, and you have given them blood to drink, for it is their just due. So let's go back now to Exodus, picking up story in Exodus 8, verse 1. So we can see there that the experience of Pharaoh and Egypt, as they had blood in their waters for 7 days, that same type of plague will strike in just a few years upon this earth too. And those who are still rebelling against God at that time, they will have blood to drink. Pretty horrible. Exodus chapter 8 and verse 1. And the Eternal spoke to Moses, go to Pharaoh and say to him, thus says the Eternal, let my people go, that they may serve me. But if you refuse to let them go, behold, I will smite all your territory with frogs. So, you know, they warned Pharaoh first time. And here again he's getting another warning. Now, listen up, Pharaoh. Pay attention. If you let my people go, fine. If you don't, there's going to be a plague of frogs throughout the land. Verse 3. So the river shall bring forth frogs abundantly, which shall go up and come into your house, into your bedchamber, on your bed, into the houses of your servants, on your people, into your ovens, into your kneading bowls. Well, that sounds like pretty much everywhere, really, doesn't it? And the frogs shall come upon you, on your people, and on all your servants. Then the Eternal spoke to Moses, say to Aaron, stretch out your hand with your rod over the streams, over the rivers, and over the ponds, and cause frogs to come up on the land of Egypt. So Aaron stretched out his hand over the waters of Egypt, and the frogs came up and covered the land of Egypt. And the magicians did so with their enchantments and brought up frogs on the land of Egypt. I mean, quite easy to conceal a few more frogs, I guess, when there's millions all over the place. But they at least pretended to do that. Notice they couldn't actually get the frogs to leave. Only add a few more to the millions that were already leaping about your house and bedroom and so on. And it must have been really quite, you know, unpleasant. I mean, these frogs were everywhere. I guess they were frogs as small as just a half an inch. And big frogs the size of footballs, and they were everywhere. You walked through your house, you'd step on them and squelch over frogs. You pull your bed covers back in the night and there's frogs in your bed. Go to the toilet and there's frogs hopping about in there. So I have a shower, there's frogs in there. Open your cupboard to get some food out and there's frogs in there. I mean, it's pretty disgusting, and the frogs were absolutely everywhere, just horrible piles of frogs. And this was, again, an insult to the Egyptians, because one of their gods they had a frog's head. So they worshipped the Nile as being essentially a god. They worshipped a sort of frog-headed god. And here they were, you know, frogs being a complete nuisance underfoot, just disgusting. Verse 8, then Pharaoh called for Moses, and Aaron said, entreat the Eternal that he may take away the frogs from me and from my people, and I will let the people go, that they may sacrifice to the Eternal. I've learned my lesson, Moses. Get rid of these frogs and off you go. And Moses said to Pharaoh, accept the honor of saying when I shall intercede for you, for your servants, and for your people, to destroy the frogs from you and your houses, that they may remain in the river only. Okay, Pharaoh, you call the time, just to show that I'm really in charge here, that the God I'm dealing with is the real God. This is a real miracle from God. You set the time. You know, I won't just do it at my convenience, so Pharaoh, you choose the time, and then we'll see whether we can deliver my God and I. Verse 10, so he said, tomorrow. And he said, let it be according to your word, that you may know that there is no one like Jehovah our God. And the frogs shall depart from you, from your houses, from your servants, and from your people, they shall remain in the river only. Then Moses and Aaron went out from the Pharaoh, and Moses cried out to the Eternal concerning the frogs which he had brought against Pharaoh. So the Eternal did according to the word of Moses, and the frogs died out of the houses, out of the courtyards, and out of the fields. They gathered them together in heaps, and the land stank, because I don't know how many million frogs there were, but you got your buckets and shovels out, and you're piling up these frogs and scraping them out of the courtyard, out of your houses, out of your bedrooms, you're shaking out all the blankets and sheets, and the dead frogs coming out everywhere, you're scraping them out the back shelves of your cupboards and pantries, you've got brushes and you're pushing them to the edge of your garden, and everywhere around Egypt there's just big heaps of dead frogs decaying and stinking in the sunshine. Pretty horrible. But of course, the Israelites could now go, because Pharaoh had said so. Verse 15, but when Pharaoh saw that there was relief, he hardened his heart and did not heed them as the Eternal had predicted. So once he's out of trouble, the Pharaoh's back where he was, arrogant, tough, nobody can teach me a lesson. And of course, that's not something that's just purely an experience of the Pharaoh. How many of us, when we get into troubles and difficulties, run to God with great promises about, oh God, heal me of this disease. Oh God, get me a job. Oh God, please help me to overcome this problem. I'll promise you I'll pray more frequently and I'll read the Bible more often. And, you know, God does his stuff, delivers us, and then, of course, back to normal now. Forget God for a while because no longer under any pressure. And so it's not that Pharaoh was in some way totally unusual. He just had lots of human nature, as we've all got. Coming on to verse 16. And we now come to plague number 3. Interestingly, each third plague that we come across, there is no warning given to Pharaoh. You know, the plague number 1, the blood, he was warned. Plague number 2, the frogs, he was given a warning. Plague number 3, and later number 6, number 9, each third plague in the series, no warning for Pharaoh, it just occurred. Verse 16, so the Eternal said to Moses, say to Aaron, stretch out your rod and strike the dust of the land so that it may become lice throughout all the land of Egypt. So there's no evidence here that the Pharaoh was given a warning. It just took place. And they did so, for Aaron stretched out his hand with his rod and struck the dust of the earth, and it became lice on man and beast. All the dust of the land became lice throughout all the land of Egypt. Lice probably is better translated as gnats or little mosquitoes. The commentaries seem to debate exactly what type of gnat or mosquito it might be, but apparently very, very small ones with power to sting and be most uncomfortable. And because they're so tiny, they get absolutely everywhere, under your clothes, in your underpants, you name it, biting and chomping away and bringing you out into all sorts of pain and misery. Verse 18. Now the magicians so worked with their enchantments to bring forth lice. Oh, but this time they couldn't deliver. The frogs they'd managed to do something about, and the blood they'd done something about, but these gnats and mosquitoes, nope, they could not. So there were lice on man and beast. Then the magician said to Pharaoh, we've got news for you. Actually, this is the work of a great God. This is the finger of God. But Pharaoh's heart grew hard, and he did not heed them, just as the Eternal had said. I mean, to be fair, you know, God knew this Pharaoh rather well. He'd watched him growing up. He'd seen him dealing with people for decades. God knew how to call this man's character and temperament very well. But here were these gnats and lice everywhere, causing endless grief and misery. And Pharaoh, nope, he's not a man for yielding. On to chapter 8, verse 20. Plague number 4. And the Eternal said to Moses, rise early in the morning and stand before Pharaoh as he comes out to the water. And of course they've been here once before. Then say to him, thus says the Eternal, let my people go, that they may serve me. Or else, so on the fourth plague, there is a warning. Or else, if you will not let my people go, behold, I will send swarms of flies on you and your servants, on your people and into your houses. The houses of the Egyptians shall be full of swarms of flies, and also the ground on which they stand. Now you see the word of flies is in italics, at least in the King James Version and the New King James Version, because it may be flies and would be something similar, but swarms is all that's there in the actual Hebrew. I will send swarms into your houses, swarms into your land, and the belief is it would be probably a mixture of flies, dog flies, beetles, gnats, lots of miscellaneous flying creatures, all pretty horrible, and are going to cause you again a lot of grief and discomfort, even on the ground you stand on. And of course in your houses you can't sort of run indoors and shut the door and get the air conditioning on and think, well, that's fabulous now, I can look out the window at all those flies flying by, but I'm nice and comfortable, you know, here in my house. Answer, no. Inside your house, you're as uncomfortable because the swarms are swarming all over your kitchen, your bedroom, your lounge, everywhere. But notice a change here, or a new development in verse 22. And in that day, I will set apart the land of Goshen, in which my people dwell, that no swarms shall be there. In order, Pharaoh, that you may know that I am the Eternal in the midst of the land. I will make a difference between my people and your people. Tomorrow, this sign shall be. So Pharaoh is getting his warning. If you don't change your mind, there'll be swarms of insects arriving. But Pharaoh, you're going to notice something very special. Over in Goshen, where the Israelites dwell, they won't have any. Just on the Egyptians. Verse 24. And the Eternal did so. Thick swarms of flies came into the house of Pharaoh, into his servants' houses, and into all the land of Egypt. The land was corrupted because of the swarms of flies or whatever. Then Pharaoh called for Moses and Aaron and said, go, sacrifice to your God in the land. You know, so all of a sudden, Pharaoh's perhaps just starting to feel a bit of the pressure now. This is terrible. Calls for Moses and Aaron and says, okay, you can go and sacrifice, but in this land, in Egypt. Moses asked that he could leave Egypt for a 3 days' journey. And so what Pharaoh's doing is he's offering a compromise. You know, Pharaoh was a politician. He's going to negotiate. He doesn't yet believe he's dealing with the creator God of the whole universe. He thinks, well, okay, they want to go 3 days outside the land. What I'll offer is they can go and sacrifice, but only in Egypt. Okay, Moses and Aaron, go sacrifice to your God, whoever he is, but in the land. I'll give you that far, but that's as far as you're going. And Moses said, it is not right to do so, for we would be sacrificing the abomination of the Egyptians to the Eternal, our God. If we sacrifice the abomination of the Egyptians before their eyes, then will they not stone us? We will go 3 days' journey into the wilderness and sacrifice to the Eternal our God as he will command us. And Pharaoh said, I will let you go that you may sacrifice to the Eternal your God in the wilderness, only you shall not go very far away. Intercede for me. A little bit more negotiating, but tell you what, you're not going where you think you're going, Moses, okay? Then Moses said, indeed, I am going out from you, and I will entreat the Eternal that the swarms of flies may depart tomorrow from Pharaoh, from his servants, and from his people. But let Pharaoh not deal deceitfully any more in not letting the people go to sacrifice to the Eternal. Moses felt he'd got a deal. So Moses went out from Pharaoh and entreated the Eternal. And the Eternal did according to the word of Moses. He removed the swarms of flies from Pharaoh, from his servants, and from his people. Not one remained. Oh, but Pharaoh hardened his heart at this time also. Neither would he let the people go. Now he's off the hook again. Now the pressure has been removed. Suddenly, Pharaoh returns to his normal attitude. A danger that all of us can have. When the pressure's on, we're getting close to God. When the pressure's off, for frankly, there's so much more to do with our time than spend it with the Creator. What's interesting here about the Israelites is that they were protected and preserved during this plague and subsequent ones. And God can keep his people safe, even though, so to speak, all hell's breaking loose around them. There could be swarms of insects everywhere, but where the Israelites were, fine. They could sit in their deck chairs, enjoy the sunshine, have their barbecues and picnics. No swarms there. And that's a lesson that many of us hopefully will experience firsthand in the next few years. To keep your place there, let's turn briefly to Psalms chapter 91. Psalms 91. We can see an example here of a prophecy, which, as I say, hopefully we'll all be experiencing the right way around. Psalms 91. Starting in verse 1, reading all the way through to, I think, verse 8. He who dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Eternal, He is my refuge and my fortress, my God. In Him I will trust. So here's somebody who's very close to God, has a very intimate relationship with God, and looks to God as a protector, as a refuge, as a fortress. Verse 3, surely He shall deliver you from the snare of the fowler, the person that traps birds, and from the perilous pestilence. Oh, so some nasty disease or other danger, and you'll be protected. He shall cover you with His feathers, and under His wings you shall take refuge. His truth shall be your shield and buckler. You shall not be afraid of the terror by night, nor of the arrow, or missile, that flies by day, nor of the pestilence that walks in darkness, nor of the destruction that lays waste at noonday. Might not be nuclear weapons? 1,000 may fall at your side, and 10,000 at your right hand, but it shall not come near you. Only with your eyes shall you look and see the reward of the wicked. So here's a prophetic psalm here, a promise to those who are close to God, that in a dangerous time to come, when perhaps missiles are flying by day, when there's pestilence and nuclear weapons being let loose, when 10,000 people might literally die close to us, that it will not come near to us. Only with our eyes we will see it, just as in ancient Egypt, the Israelites could look across and see the devastation, destruction taking place on the Egyptians. They could see the wreckage, you know, there too later. But in Goshen, God's people were protected. There was a separation made between, you know, those who were God's chosen and those who were on the other side. So hopefully, in a few years' time, as the end time events erupt all around us, we'll be able to watch and see these things, but know that we will be protected and safeguarded, just as ancient Israel was. Right, back to where we were. We're now up to chapter 9, starting in verse 1. Then the Eternal said to Moses, go into Pharaoh and tell him, thus says the Eternal God of the Hebrews, let my people go, that they may serve me. But if you refuse to let them go, and still hold them, behold, so here's another warning, this is fine, God usually warns, but not all the time, behold, the hand of the Eternal will be on your cattle in the field, on the horses, on the donkeys, on the camels, on the oxen, and on the sheep. There will be a very severe pestilence. This is plague number 5 now. And the Eternal will make a difference between the livestock of Israel and the livestock of Egypt, so nothing shall die of all that belongs to the children of Israel. So God's ability to bring down plagues on one group whilst protecting another group, it's demonstrated here. Then the Eternal appointed a set time, saying, tomorrow the Eternal will do this thing in the land. So the Eternal did this thing on the next day, and all the livestock of Egypt died. But of the livestock of the children of Israel, not one died. Then Pharaoh sent, and indeed, not even one of the livestock of the Israelites was dead. But the heart of the Pharaoh became hard, And he still did not let the people go. He wasn't sure about this, but he sent some spies off. You know, race off there, get in your chariot, just check out around Goshen, find out if they've got dead cattle everywhere like we have. And they came back and said, no, Pharaoh, we can't find even, you know, one dead donkey in Goshen. They're all jumping about and looking quite happy. Oh. But despite that, your man Pharaoh was not for twisting. Verse 8, we come now to plague number 6, and again, no warning here. So the third plague, no warning. Sixth plague, no warning. Ninth plague, when we get there, no warning. Verse 8, so the Eternal said to Moses and Aaron, take for yourselves handfuls of ashes from a furnace, and let Moses scatter it toward the heavens in the sight of Pharaoh. So wait till Pharaoh's there, so you can see what you're doing. Take all this ash and throw it up into the sky, let it blow through the air. And it will become fine dust in all the land of Egypt, and it will cause boils that break out in sores on man and beast throughout all the land of Egypt. Then they took ashes from the furnace and stood before Pharaoh, and Moses scattered them toward heaven, and they caused boils that break out in sores on man and beast. And these boils, I think the Hebrew implies, are like burning blisters. So quite horrible. If your skin, face, and your arms and armpits and groin and thighs and your behind and legs, ankles all break out, and things that swell up painfully, that blister, that then burst open, and there's sores there, and you can't sit down, you can't walk properly, you can't lie properly. Your eyelids have got blisters and sores on them. Verse 11, and the magicians could not stand before Moses because of the boils, for their boils were on the magicians and on all the Egyptians. But the Eternal hardened the heart of Pharaoh, and he did not heed them, just as the Eternal had spoken to Moses. Verse 13, we come to plague number 7. Before we leave that, let's just check briefly in Revelation 16. I think we'll find that that boils and blisters and sores will be poured out yet again in the future, because I guess it's one way to get people's attention. Revelation 16, the seven last plagues, verses 1 and 2. Then I heard a loud voice from the temple saying to the seven angels, who had these seven last plagues, go and pour out the bowls or vials of the wrath of God on the earth. So the first went and poured out his bowl upon the earth, and a foul and loathsome sore came upon the men who had the mark of the beast and those who worshipped his image. So for those that go along with the end time beast power and accept the mark of the beast, you know, Sunday keeping and so on, then a dreadful, loathsome, painful, burning, blistering sore will be poured out upon them. And so, you know, God's quite prepared to use these same plagues that made such a difference in Egypt to be used at the end of this age too. Right, to verse 13 of chapter 9. To the seventh plague. Then the Eternal said to Moses, rise early in the morning and stand before Pharaoh and say to him, this will be, I guess, down by the water again, a fairly frequent meeting place it seems, and here, plague number 7, there is a warning to Pharaoh. Thus says the Eternal God of the Hebrews, let my people go, that they may serve me. For at this time I will send all my plagues to your very heart, and on your servants, and on your people, that you may know that there is none like me in all the earth. Now, if I stretched out my hand and struck you and your people with pestilence, then you would have been cut off from the earth. You know, I could have cut the lot of you off, God says to Moses, to tell Pharaoh. I could have stretched out my hands and destroyed the entire nation, lock, stock and barrel, every bit of it. But indeed, for this purpose I have raised you up, or kept you there, kept you standing, that I may show my power in you, and that my name may be declared in all the earth. And as yet, you exalt yourself against my people, in that you will not let them go. You know, I've kept you alive, Pharaoh. I haven't wiped you and all your people out as yet. I'm giving you a chance, but you keep on, you know, toughening up your attitude, your heart, you won't respond. Behold, verse 18, tomorrow, about this time, which is, of course, early in the morning, I will cause very heavy hail to rain down such as has not been in Egypt since its founding until now. Therefore, send now and gather your livestock and all that you have in the field, for the hail shall come down on every man and every beast which is found in the field and is not brought home, and they shall die. Like anything that's in the open, it's going to die. He who feared the word of the Eternal among the servants of Pharaoh made his servants and his livestock flee to the houses. You know, there were quite a number of Egyptians who were not, you know, not dummies. They weren't hard-hearted like their boss was. Some of these people were just ordinary people, you know, tradesmen and farmers and so on, and they were already chewing their fingernails off with fear about what's going to happen next to us. And so they heard this word that, oh, we're being warned of a great heavy hail tomorrow, and we're being warned that anything out in the open is going to be killed. Wow, right, okay. So they went off straight away, some of these people, and they got their livestock and servants, you know, indoors, out of harm's way. Verse 21, but he who did not regard the word of the Eternal left his servants and his livestock in the field. Huh. I don't believe this Jehovah character, this Moses, another wild tale. I can't imagine people's stubbornness and not believing after you'd thought frogs and boils and blisters and gnats and lice and blood and so on. You thought even the thickest Egyptian would have realized by now that there was a big problem here. But amazingly, some people, they just will not, no matter what you do, pay any attention. Verse 22. Then the Eternal said to Moses, stretch out your hand toward heaven, that there may be hail in all the land of Egypt, on man, on beast, and on every herb of the field throughout the land of Egypt. And Moses stretched out his rod toward heaven, and the Eternal sent thunder and hail, and fire darted to the ground, and the Eternal rained hail on the land of Egypt. So there was hail and fire mingled with the hail, so very heavy that there was none like it in all the land of Egypt since it became a nation. Now hail here might be, you know, frozen water in the form of big hailstones. It's also possible that it was actual sort of meteors, a meteorite shower, because these could be large boulders hurling out the sky, mingled with a fire and sulfur and so on, and of course great boulders raining out the sky. If you go through an asteroid cloud or something and there's just tens of thousands or millions of gigantic boulders and small boulders hurtling out the sky, that'll soon damage anything out in the open. So it's possibly meteorites, possibly it is frozen water. Verse 25, and the hail struck throughout the whole land of Egypt, all that was in the field, both man and beast, and the hail struck every herb of the field and broke every tree of the field. So all the branches just smashed to pieces as these boulders or hailstones just hurled themselves down on them. And anybody out in the field, I mean, you're just brained. One of these things struck in the head, whether a cow or a man, I mean, you're a goner. Only, verse 26, in the land of Goshen, where the children of Israel were, there was no hail. God can protect his people. And Pharaoh sent and called for Moses and Aaron and said to them, I have sinned this time, I admit it. You know, I've made a mistake. Oh, woe's me. Mea culpa, mea culpa. The Eternal is righteous, and my people and I are wicked. Entreat the Eternal that there may be no more mighty thundering and hail, for it is enough. I will let you go, and you shall stay no longer. I've seen the light this time. You know, I'm coming down the sawdust trail. I'm repenting. And Moses said to him, okay, all right. As soon as I've gone out of the city, I will spread out my hands to the Eternal. The thunder will cease, and there will be no more hail, that you may know that the earth is the Eternal's. But as for you and your servants, I know that you will not yet fear the Eternal God. So Moses, I think he knew by now, he's seen the pattern developing, and he caught on to the story. So I think he suspected, well, it's not going to happen. Verse 32, but the wheat and the spelt were not struck, for they are late crops. Sorry, missed out verse 31. Now the flax and the barley were struck, for the barley was in the head, and the flax was in bud. But the wheat and the spelt were not struck, for they are late crops. It gives us a close picture of the time of year here, probably sort of a late February, very early March, when the time of year when in Egypt the barley and the flax would be up, and being up, they were flattened by the hailstones, but the wheat and the spelt, they hadn't developed far enough yet, so they were in that sense saved. Verse 33, so Moses went out of the city from Pharaoh and spread out his hands to the Eternal, and the thunder and the hail ceased, and the rain was not poured on the earth. And when Pharaoh saw that the rain, the hail, and the thunder had ceased, he sinned yet more, and he hardened his heart, he and his servants. So the heart of Pharaoh was hard, neither would he let the children of Israel go, as Eternal had predicted again by Moses. So this guy, you know, if you really pile the pressure on him, he would almost get as far as agreeing to something, but you take the pressure off and bang, he's right back where he was. He's a hard man to convince. And again, hailstones, whether it's frozen ice blocks or whether it's actual meteorites, will play a part in the future. This particular plague will repeat. Let's turn to Revelation 16 once again briefly. Revelation 16 and starting in verse 17. Revelation 16, verse 17, still these last seven plagues. Then the seventh angel poured out his bowl or vial into the air, and a loud voice came out of the temple of heaven from the throne, saying, it is done. Verse 21, and great hail from heaven fell upon men, every hailstone about the weight of a talent, which my margin says is about 75 pounds in weight. That's quite heavy if it falls 21,000 feet out of the sky on your head. And men blasphemed God because of the plague of the hail, since that plague was exceedingly great. You know, it's amazing that even after the seven last plagues here, even after the seven trumpets and so on, that when God gets so involved and even finally sends down earthquakes and islands all flee away and great hail falls weighing 75 pounds a time, that men blaspheme God. So, you know, Pharaoh isn't entirely on his own, is he? In the end time, there'll be plenty of Pharaoh lookalikes who, despite all the plagues that come upon them, resist and oppose God right to the very, very end. You will not be able to get to them. They just will not respond. Right, back to Exodus, and picking up the story now in chapter 10. Heading towards plague number 8. Now the Eternal said to Moses, go into Pharaoh, for I have hardened his heart and the hearts of his servants, that I may show these signs of mine before him, and that you may tell in the hearing of your son and your son's son the mighty things I have done in Egypt, and my signs which I have done among them, that you may know that I am the Eternal. There's great lessons being written here for all people down through the last, you know, thousands of years. Like Paul wrote, all these things were written down for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. You know, you and I today can go back over these events of Exodus, the plagues, the lessons that Moses learned, the lessons that Pharaoh didn't learn, and you and I can learn things here. We can see how quickly, you know, God can bring down an empire. It just takes a few weeks and nothing that special. Frogs, flies, boils, bloody water, and a few days later, a few weeks later, an empire is gone. Picking up the story now in verse 3. So Moses and Aaron came in to Pharaoh and said to him, thus says the Eternal God of the Hebrews, how long will you refuse to humble yourself before me? Let my people go, that they may serve me. Or else, if you refuse to let my people go, behold, tomorrow I will bring locusts into your territory. So there's a warning with plague number 8. There won't be with plague number 9. Verse 5, and they, these locusts, shall cover the face of the earth so that no one will be able to see the earth, and they shall eat the residue of what is left, which remains to you from the hail, and they shall eat every tree which grows up for you out of the field. They shall fill your houses, the houses of all your servants, and the houses of all the Egyptians, which neither your fathers nor your father's fathers have seen, since the day that they were on the earth to this day, there's going to be a miraculous, humongous number of locusts heading your way, Pharaoh. They're going to cover the land. They'll be in your houses again. And every green thing they can find anywhere, anything that's left from the previous plagues, they're going to munch through the lot of it. And he turned and went from Pharaoh. Then Pharaoh's servant said to him, how long shall this man be a snare to us? Let the men go, that they may serve the Eternal their God. Do you not know that Egypt, do you not yet know that Egypt is destroyed? I mean, they could look around and think, we can't take much more of this. You know, bit by bit, our land is being absolutely devastated and destroyed. So let the men go. You know, then perhaps this will all stop. So Moses and Aaron were brought again to Pharaoh, and he said to them, go, serve the Eternal your God. But who are the ones that are going? Just remind me, who's going with you to this sacrifice? And Moses said, we will go with our young and our old, with our sons and our daughters, our flocks, our herds, we will go, for we must hold a feast to the Eternal. Then he said to them, you know, he loses his temper, Pharaoh does here, the Eternal had better be with you when I let you and your little ones go. Probably paraphrase that, you know, sorry mate, the day will never come when I will ever let you and all you people go. Beware, for evil is ahead of you. Not so. Go now, you who are men, and serve the Eternal. For that's what you asked, that's what you desired. And they were driven out from Pharaoh's presence. So he was offering a compromise of sorts. You'll never, in my sight, Moses, be allowed to leave with your families and flocks. You men can go. The men can go. Not the kids. Not the ladies. Not the herds. Not the flocks. Just you men. And of course, you know, sometimes in our lives, we do get offered compromises when we're trying to go God's way. You know, we may be facing difficulties, perhaps a boss we're trying to convince that we should be allowed time off for the Sabbath or the holy days. And sometimes, you know, Satan's around. The answer is, well, let's offer you a compromise and perhaps that'll be okay. Well, the answer is that usually it's not. Compromises in many situations don't work and don't help. I remember as a young man growing up in a Catholic household, when it finally was revealed that I didn't believe in the Catholic religion, and I was mixed up in this strange American religion from Pasadena, California, that my mum said to me, if you don't like the Catholic Church, you don't believe in it, well, why don't you go to one of these nice Protestant churches just down the road? They meet on Sundays, and you can enjoy that, and it's only a few hundred yards away. And it was well-meaning, of course, nothing malicious about it, but it was like a compromise. If you don't want the Catholic Church, what about this nice Protestant church? What about that one? And then a little bit later, as problems developed, I remember my dad taking me aside one day and saying, you know, this American religion that you're involved in, you know, dodgy stuff, why don't you give it up just for a few years until you're much older? If you'd like, we'd buy you a car. And so the temptation was, oh, a bit of a compromise here. I can get a car. I've just got to give up my beliefs for a few years, you know. And a bit like, you know, Pharaoh's doing here. Let's negotiate a compromise, Moses. But as far as God's laws are concerned, there is no compromise. God's looking for obedience, not for a compromise. Verse 12. Eternal said to Moses, stretch out your hand over the land of Egypt for the locusts, that they may come upon the land of Egypt and eat every herb of the land, or for the Americans, every herb of the land, all the hail, or ale, has left. So Moses stretched out his rod over the land of Egypt, and the Eternal brought an east wind on the land all that day and all that night. And when it was morning, oh dear, the east wind brought the locusts. And the locusts went up over all the land of Egypt and rested in all the territory of Egypt. They were very severe. Previously, there had been no such locusts as they, nor shall there be such after them. The Egyptians knew what locusts were. They'd seen them before. I guess they'd been attacked from time to time before, but not this way. Not this many locusts of this size with these appetites, for they covered the face of the whole earth. So the land was darkened. You know, if you'd been flying an aeroplane and looked down, you'd just see the whole land is just heaving with sort of, you know, dark, browny black like a wave over the land, everything moving and heaving, and it's just locusts, you know, a foot thick over the entire country. So the land was darkened, and they ate every herb of the land, and all the fruit of the trees which the hail had left. So there remained nothing green on the trees or on the plants of the field throughout all the land of Egypt. You know, just, that's it, gone. All the crops, the fruit you're going to live off as a people, all gone. These insects have gobbled up the lot. There's nothing left to eat. The land is now stripped bare. And if you can imagine, you know, in our day and age, hailstones or meteorite showers over New York and London and Los Angeles and San Antonio, every green thing in the fields and pastures gobbled up by locusts that arrive by the millions, boils and blisters over people. It doesn't take too much, really, does it, to bring a country down? Verse 16. Then Pharaoh called for Moses and Aaron hastened and said, I have sinned against the Eternal, your God, and against you. Now, therefore, please forgive my sin only this once, and entreat the Eternal, your God, that he may take away from me this death only. So he went out from Pharaoh and entreated the Eternal. And the Eternal turned a very strong west wind, which took the locusts away and blew them into the Red Sea. There remained not one locust in all the territory of Egypt. But the Eternal hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he did not let the children of Israel go. It wasn't so much that God had to do much here. You know, just have to take the heat off slightly, and Pharaoh's heart hardens itself. Verse 21. Ninth plague, no warning. Remember, 3, 6, and 9, no warnings. Then the Eternal said to Moses, stretch out your hand toward heaven, that there may be darkness over the land of Egypt, darkness which may even be felt. This is a strange darkness. So Moses stretched out his hand toward heaven, and there was thick darkness in all the land of Egypt for 3 days. They did not see one another, nor did anyone rise from his place for 3 days. I mean, it's so black. You can't see a thing anywhere. You can't light your candles. You can't find matches. You can't find a candle. You try and strike a match, nothing happens. This is a strange, miraculous darkness. So dark you can't move anywhere. You can't walk in case you fall down a hole into a ditch. If you're in the field when this took place, you're staying in that field for 3 days. In your bedroom, in your bedroom for 3 days. You might try and walk about and bump into things and think, I don't know where I am. But you just sit here for 3 days and 3 nights. Just blackness. So black that you can almost reach your hand out and just feel it. But in Goshen, all the children of Israel had light in their dwellings. Their candles were on. They could still open the evening paper and read it. And while the Egyptians were sitting there stewing away in thick darkness. Then Pharaoh called to Moses and said, go. You know, I've seen the light this time, so to speak. Go. Serve the Eternal. Only your flocks and your herds shall be kept back. Let your little ones also go with you. Another compromise on its way here. Pharaoh under great pressure again. The only time he'll pay any attention, but only for a few minutes, it seems. And he says, okay, Moses, off you go. Take the little ones with you. But not your flocks and herds. We'll keep those, we will. And of course, ultimately, I guess the Israelites wouldn't leave without their flocks, would they? They'd need all that, you know, that wool and the meat and the wealth it represented. So if they had left, most of them would have turned around and come back again. And probably Pharaoh knew that. So here's another compromise. Okay, all you people can go, but not the wealth represented by your flocks and herds and sheep and goats and cattle. But Moses said, no, you must also give us sacrifices and burnt offerings that we may sacrifice to the Eternal our God. Our livestock also shall go with us. Not a hoof shall be left behind. For we must take some of them to serve the Eternal our God. And even we do not know with what we must serve the Eternal until we get there. But the Eternal hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he would not let them go. Then Pharaoh said to him, get away from me. Take heed to yourself, see my face no more. In the day you see my face, you'll die. And Moses said, yeah, you've spoken well. I will never see your face again. So they reached the end of the road here. Pharaoh is now getting to the point of violence. I see your face one more time, Moses, and you're a dead man. And Moses is getting quite uppity as well. Too true. You'll never see my face again, Pharaoh. And this strange darkness that brought this about, of course, that also will happen again in the future. Back for the last time to Revelation 16. And of course, locusts will also come along at the end as well. That's another scripture. But to Revelation 16, and starting, I think, in verse 10. This is the fifth of the final seven plagues in Revelation, verse 10. Then the fifth angel poured out his bowl or vial on the throne of the beast, and his kingdom became full of darkness. And they gnawed their tongues because of the pain. This darkness seems to bring with it, you know, anguish and pain and discomfort. But full of darkness, verse 11. And they blasphemed the God of heaven because of their pains and their sores, and did not repent of their deeds. Just like Pharaoh, these people are hard-hearted. And whether it's the darkness, or the scorching sunshine, or the bloody waters, you know, the boils, they will not repent. Back to chapter 11. And the first three verses of chapter 11 probably should go in like in brackets, like a parenthesis, because the story finishes in verse 29 of chapter 10 and then picks up again in verse 4. But we'll get to that in a moment. So chapter 11, we read here, and the Eternal said to Moses, or had said to Moses, the Eternal had said to Moses, I will bring yet one more plague on Pharaoh and on Egypt. So Moses knew what was coming, basically. Afterward, he will let you go from here. When he lets you go, he will surely drive you out of here altogether. There's one more coming, Moses, I'll just warn you that, and it's going to be a bad one. And when that one's over, this guy's going to run you out of the land. Speak now in the hearing of the people, and let every man ask from his neighbor, and every woman from her neighbor, articles of silver and articles of gold, which we said before was really, you know, back wages for all the slavery, unpaid, of the Israelites. And the Eternal gave the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians. Moreover, the man Moses was very great in the land of Egypt, in the sight of Pharaoh's servants, and in the sight of the people. You know, Moses was greatly respected, probably would say greatly feared by the people, because he was the man behind all these plagues that were destroying their country. So the ordinary people had great respect, awe, and fear of Moses, but not your Pharaoh. He's a different man entirely. So verse 29, we'll read it again, chapter 10. And Moses said, you have spoken well, I will never see your face again. And dropping down to verse 4, picks up the rest of that particular story. Then Moses said to Pharaoh, thus says Eternal, about midnight, one of these days, I will go out into the midst of Egypt, and all the firstborn in the land of Egypt shall die, from the firstborn of Pharaoh, who sits on his throne, even to the firstborn of the maidservant, who is behind the handmill, and all the firstborn of the beasts. Then there shall be a great cry throughout all the land of Egypt, such as was not like it before, nor shall be like it again. This was going to be a devastating sort of final blow. The firstborn in every household, whether it's royalty or slaves in the dungeons, firstborn of every animal will be killed at midnight. I mean, I'm just looking around this room here. I was the firstborn in my family. My wife Maureen is the firstborn in her family. And my son here is the first and only born in this family. So firstborn would actually take out this entire McNabb family. All three of us would be dead. When you talk about killing the firstborn, you're talking about bringing the senior people, the ones that would inherit most of the wealth and so on, the most mature, all being killed. It would be an absolutely devastating blow to Egypt. Verse 7, but against none of the children of Israel shall a dog move his tongue, against man or beast, that you may know that the Eternal does make a difference between the Egyptians and Israel. And all these your servants shall come down to me and bow down to me, saying, get out, and all the people who follow you. After that, I will go out. You know, he said that he would never see Moses' face again without killing him. And Moses said, you're too true blue. I'll never see your face again. So what would happen was that a few days later, when this 10th plague had struck it would be Pharaoh's servants that would make the journey to see Moses and come to get lost. So verse 8 there. And then he went out from Pharaoh in great anger. You know, Moses was really pretty agitated by now. Time after time after time, this guy had the opportunity to repent. He had turned out to be a liar. He was a man who sought to deceive. He endlessly tried to offer compromises. And even now, facing the death of the firstborn, he was still not paying any attention. And, you know, Moses was just indignant. You know, such a waste. But the Eternal said to Moses, Pharaoh will not heed you, so that my wonders may be multiplied in the land of Egypt. So Moses and Aaron did all these wonders before Pharaoh, and the Eternal hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he did not let the children of Israel go out of his land. So that brings us to the end of chapter 11, a very good place to stop, because chapter 12 brings us into the actual Passover itself, the night to be much remembered, the Feast of Unleavened Bread. There's a huge amount of interesting material in chapter 12, much of it disputed and debated in the churches of God, unfortunately. But next time, which hopefully will be next week, we will take up the story and perhaps spend a bit more time going through chapter 12 in more detail, try to get it as accurate as we can in this really dramatic event that took place and was the final straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak, and brought about the delivery, the deliverance, the release of ancient Israel from Egypt. And of course, for you and I, the Passover and the death of Jesus Christ, the Lamb of God, is what, you know, redeems us from slavery in this society and gives us our freedom to head towards our promised land, the kingdom of God. Okay, so we'll conclude the Bible study there at the end of chapter 11, and next time, pick up the story at chapter 12.